Hello, dear friends. Valerie Solovey with you. This is episode 208 of What's Happening. You'll see it on Friday, September 19th, at 1 p.m. Moscow time. Dear friends, I don't know if you missed me. I certainly missed you. Unfortunately, because I'm, still am, traveling, I haven't been able to go on air as regularly as I used to, much less on the days you're accustomed to, and to which, frankly, I'm accustomed to. And this pause, this forced pause, this bit of confusion, will continue through the first half of next week, but then we'll get back to, well, at least, I hope you'll get back to, your usual schedule of communicating with me, and I'll get back to my usual schedule of communicating with you. The main topics of today's episode aren't what they seem. And the editorial team has long since explained this. I'm now, dear friends, or rather, I should probably say, for the last few days, maybe even the last week, hearing a chorus of voices saying that the Kremlin, once they've dealt with Ukraine, will certainly turn to Europe and the flight or overflight of 19 drones through Polish airspace. This, of course, is a clear hint. And then, a third world war looms almost in the distance. I've noticed that, coincidentally, or perhaps not coincidence at all, but rather predictably, the same people who, in late 2021 and early 2022, were saying that there was no military conflict between Russia and Ukraine, and that there could not be one, are talking about the imminent war between Russia and Europe, the near inevitability of this war. It's absolutely out of the question. And as you, dear friends, hopefully understand, these people were wrong then, and I would say this time, despite all their inner conviction and insistence on repeating it, they are just as wrong. Ask yourself, why the hell would the Kremlin, the Kremlinites, start a war against Europe, against the European Union? Ask yourself what they stand to gain from it, having already in their arsenal, having, I would say, invaluable, in quotes, and estimated at a huge number of Czech casualties and material losses, the experience of 3 years, more than 3 years, of armed confrontation with Ukraine. What is the point of an armed confrontation with Europe? Absolutely no point. What would it be needed for? To enter a devastated Poland, to invade the devastated Baltic states, and for Russia to gain in return. Moreover, I repeat, they already have experience of armed confrontation. And this experience speaks against it, and I can tell you with absolute certainty that the Kremlin is interested in any kind of armed confrontation. I draw your attention to this, I emphasize that the Kremlin is not interested in armed confrontation. This does not mean that it is not interested in an active policy. You can take this phrase, or rather the word active, in quotation marks, or without them, because it is a very ambiguous term in this case, as you will understand. So, it is interested in an active policy towards the European Union. But the goals of this policy lie in an entirely different plane. They are by no means military, they lie rather in the plane of hybrid and political, well, hybrid operations, political. This means that the Kremlin currently has two goals, two main goals, in relation to the European Union or, if you prefer, in relation to the European part of NATO. In this case, they are one and the same, and this is a very, very coincidence, and this is very important for us. So, the first thing the Kremlin would like to do is counteract resistance, neutralize Europe's opposition to the conclusion of a Russian-Ukrainian peace treaty. The Kremlin is convinced that Europe is practically the main obstacle, along with President Zelensky's position, but even Europe's role is more important, practically the main obstacle to peace between Russia and Ukraine. Naturally, you understand, on terms favorable to the Kremlin and, as the Kremlin believes, favorable to the Russian Federation. But I draw your attention to the fact that I am laying out the logic of the Kremlin's thinking and behavior, and I'm not offering any judgments on how realistic or unrealistic these assumptions are. And what I am telling you may, of course, not correspond to your worldview. You may view this political, military, and political situation entirely differently. But I know very well what the Kremlin is thinking, and I am telling you what guides it. So, first, neutralize the European Union's opposition to the conclusion of a peace treaty with Ukraine. Because from the Kremlin's perspective, if there hadn't been this resistance, the peace treaty would probably have already been signed. Although the Kremlin believes it will be signed anyway, it will be signed under conditions that are likely, or rather, these conditions presuppose a compromise on both sides, Russia and Ukraine. So, this is one goal of the Kremlin in what I call its active policy toward Europe. The Kremlin's second goal is to weaken, and if possible, undermine NATO. That's why it's probing NATO for military matters, sending drones over Polish airspace. And so far, I can tell you, these provocations, from the Kremlin's perspective, certainly appear quite successful. Let me emphasize again, I'm speaking from the Kremlin's perspective. Perhaps from the perspective of European politicians, it looks different. From the perspective of some observers, it looks different. From the Kremlin's perspective, these provocations appear successful. And in general, they appear even more successful. And they will certainly continue. It will definitely continue, not necessarily with regard to Poland. There are other countries that can be probed over time, because in this case, the Kremlin is acting in unison and by some informal agreement with American President Trump, because American President Trump doesn't want NATO to exist. And even more so, he doesn't want the United States to bear responsibility for its European NATO allies, to pay for them, to provide them with an air shield, a military shield, any other bills, while they prosper and rest under a reliable umbrella paid for by American taxpayers. And in this case, some fundamental interests of the Kremlin and President Trump have converged, and they are acting, frankly speaking, in unison, which improves the long-term outlook. I won't presume to judge how long it will last, since all men are mortal. The US presidency, unlike the Russian one, which can prove quite long and has already proved quite long, is suddenly mortal. It lasted until the 23rd year of Putin's presidency. So, Trump's presidency will end sooner or later, and so, too, may this alliance, as some Iranian spiritual leader might call it, an alliance of the wicked. But for now, what we have is what we have. And the Kremlin doesn't need any war to achieve these goals. In fact, it's extremely interested. The Kremlin desperately needs a peace treaty with Ukraine. I can assure you that negotiations on this matter are proceeding quite successfully. Difficult, but quite successfully. Sorry. My throat has been dry lately. Apparently, some kind of minor infection. The negotiations are proceeding quite successfully. And first and foremost, by the way, the negotiations are not so much between the Russian and Ukrainian sides, but between Russia and the United States, because Russia, or the Kremlin, assumes that the United States will play a decisive role. Again, they assume that the United States will play a decisive role in forcing Ukraine to sign a peace treaty. If the main terms of this peace treaty are agreed upon between Russia and the United States, these terms are being negotiated very successfully right now. As far as I know, they are more or less 90% agreed upon. Well, if this peace treaty is signed before the new year, or at least if not a peace treaty, then a decisive step towards it is taken in the form of a ceasefire, then this will, of course, be thanks to the American president. And you see how the American president is trying not to quarrel with the Russian side. I was saying that they are not acting in unison. In particular, this is confirmed by the fact that the American president is essentially setting conditions for joining European sanctions that are, well, absolutely unacceptable for Europe, well, and probably completely unrealistic in any case, in any sense. Yes, another reason for the Kremlin, perhaps even the main one, besides the fact that its economic potential is exhausted, by the way, is that it is exhausted. And the fact that the country is in an economic crisis, as high-ranking government officials are already publicly saying. And, I would say, the measures designed to address this crisis are being discussed more publicly, in particular, the VAT increase, which is currently being discussed by another 2%. And much more is being discussed. Increasing the recycling fee on cars. Dear friends, yes, those of you who live in the real economy, and we are forced to live in it, understand this perfectly well and support yourself from your own incomes, which, as a rule, are very, very small for our population. This is one reason, yes, economic. The second reason is political. The transition is entering a decisive phase, the most decisive of all decisive ones. And therefore, I would like to rid ourselves of this burden in the form of a protracted, bloody, senseless confrontation. And, by the way, one of the signs, one of the elements of a major transition is the event that is now being poeticized. Dmitry Kozak, Deputy Chief of Staff of the Presidential Administration, a night without fear or reproach. In protest, well, that's what's being suggested or implied in Telegram channels, that he's resigning as deputy head of the administration. Dear friends, no one would have resigned if the Russian president were alive and if the Politburo weren't preparing for a transition. A major transition presupposes a decisive renewal, as the automakers say, a renewal, including at the top echelon of the Russian elite. Some people will be reshuffled. Like, say, with Prosecutor General Khristov, who will now find himself in the chair of the Supreme Court, but qualitatively new people will also emerge, once again, qualitatively new people replacing the old ones. That's exactly it. And that's exactly what you're seeing when we talk about Kozak's resignation. There's nothing poetic about it. Incidentally, Kozak was far from the only one who spoke out against the start of an armed confrontation between Russia and Ukraine. In particular, one of those who publicly spoke out against it was Nikolai Patrushev. Yes, he's Yastrebov's leader now, and he's operating under the prevailing realities. But back then, he asserted and spoke publicly, albeit with extreme restraint, that the possibilities of peaceful means hadn't been exhausted and that the potential of a different, non-military policy could be exploited. Well, that's what happened. We all found ourselves in a qualitatively different situation. So, what's happening with Kozak is precisely one element, not the most important yet, but nonetheless very noticeable, of a major transition. And the way it's being dissected, well, dear friends, there are many fantasists in Russia. Well, you know that very well. In reality, this is the bread and butter of so-called political experts, a fantasy dreamed up by something that never even existed, ignoring or unwilling to see what's actually happening. And I can't say that it's not what it seems. Unfortunately, this is what it turned out to be and what it was from the start. This news that Yulia Navalnaya, she, I believe, following her late husband, was immediately added to the list of terrorist extremists, announced that, according to two laboratories, tests of Alexei Navalny's biological samples taken after his murder, it was indeed a murder in February 2014, showed that he was poisoned. Dear friends, those who followed my broadcasts, the SVR General's reports, will remember that we immediately announced that Alexei Anatolievich Navalny was poisoned, that it was murder, that a new poison was used, which had previously been tested on several prisoners. A poison that causes severe vascular spasms. And everyone who received this poison died. And they are dying everywhere, apparently in terrible agony. This is exactly what happened, unfortunately. May he rest in peace, and may Alexei Anatolievich Navalny be with him. Dear friends, I wouldn't like to end on a sad, even gloomy note. In fact, things are moving forward, you know, I know, or rather, I suspect, this will sound a little strange to you. For many, Things are moving forward right now, developing in an extremely positive direction. Russia is entering that great turning point I spoke about at the end of August of this year. The great turning point is beginning. I hope it won't break us, Russian society, over our knees, although, frankly, it won't be easy for us. But without this, without a turnaround in Russian politics, without a turnaround in Russian economic strategy, which will also affect the Russian legal system, we cannot do without it. Yes, great changes will not come without challenges. I hope the challenges won't be as great as those of the 1990s or, say, the 2020s and 1930s. Well, challenges await us. So, dear friends, please take care of yourselves. Take care of yourselves. This is very important. Maintain your physical and mental health, if only to enjoy life in a new, calm, prosperous, and, I hope, much fairer Russia than it is now. The country we will build, the contours of which are beginning to emerge, even though you can't yet see them. And yet, these contours are no longer just blueprints. The contours of this new country are already beginning to emerge. Participate in its construction as much as you can, by supporting us morally, by providing information, by disseminating our information. If you can help financially, that would also be wonderful. You can see the bank details and the phone number for the fast payment system in the description of this video in the first pinned comment. You can use any of these details, or rather, any payment method convenient for you. All of these methods are completely safe for you, in my case. Let me repeat once again that I hope to resume my usual schedule of public appearances, well, in the media space, only from the second half of next week. Don't be upset that you don't see me regularly. I'm upset that I can't communicate with you regularly. I hope you miss me. I certainly miss you. Once again, take care of yourselves. I will be with you until our inevitable victory, and then even longer. And I want you to know, firmly know, and have no doubt. No matter how difficult it is now, victory will be ours. It will definitely be ours.